And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into 102.5 The Game here live at Barrel House Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Toronto tonight, 7 o'clock. Puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. Steve, what's up?
What's happening?
We got a lot to get into today. A lot.
We do. And by the way, just walking over here this morning, time change last weekend. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel temperature-wise like spring.
Does it feel like spring?
But when you walk and the sun is, you know, further into the day like it is right now, it's got me in a good mood.
Mm-hmm. Well, it should be. You should be in a good mood because you know what you don't have to deal with in your walk over here?
The traffic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you never have to deal with. So I don't know if you meant for that to be an incredibly good decision on your part to live downtown, but
I don't regret
for the rest of us out there,
I don't regret it.
There's a lot of envy. Yeah. So the Predators tonight and Maple Leafs, just a quick homestand, one game, and then back out on the road.
Does that even count as a homestand?
It's just a home game, right? Yeah. It's not a stand. It's just a game. It's a quick 2 hours and 45 minutes, and then they're going to be on their way to Minnesota. Minnesota and Winnipeg over the weekend, which are huge implications on that. Of course, the NCAA tournament kicking off tonight, tipping off tonight. First tip will be at around 6:07 to be official, and that will be down in Atlanta. That'll have Loyola, Chicago, and Nevada, the 7 versus 11 matchup. And they'll get the winner of Kentucky and Kansas State, which will be in the nightcap. And then about 30 minutes after the tip of the first game out in Los Angeles, it'll be Texas A&M and Michigan. And then the nightcap out in L.A. will be Florida State and Gonzaga. So that's the games tonight.
Not a ton of sizzle if you're looking for big names there necessarily. But I think we could have some really interesting matchups. You know, I'm excited to see Loyola versus Nevada to see if that veteran team can keep it on going against a team of transfers coached by an NBA reject, basically. Kansas State gets its best player back, and Dean Wade, he should be able to go tonight after not playing at all the first weekend of the tournament. Coach Cal talking about don't drink the poison yesterday. What a great line from him. But I think that's how a lot of people view Kentucky in that regional right now, and Atlanta is – You're the highest remaining seed. You should have an easy time this weekend in Atlanta. But what we've seen in this tournament is nothing is easy. And then out west, Gonzaga, can they get back to another Final Four after breaking through last year? Florida State, I think, is a team that's more talented than anybody gave them credit for. Same thing about Texas A&M. And obviously Michigan may be becoming the model of consistency in a lot of ways in college athletics under John Beilein. So I think – while there may not be a lot of sizzle when it comes to the table tonight as games tip off, I think as it gets going, I think we're going to actually see some really good matchups.
Yeah, I thought he was kind of pulling a page out of the little Nick Saban's book, you know.
You call somebody an intern?
No. In fact, he wasn't calling the media poison, right? That's what Nick Saban said. The media, you're poison. You're rat poison, to be exact. But look, in fairness, he's trying to pull out every stop because now they went from nobody's talking about them, right? And now they're the prohibitive favorite to come out, which is crazy after the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. But because of the way it played out in that region with no Virginia, no Cincinnati, no Tennessee, I mean, list goes on and on. Yeah, and so he doesn't want his kids going, now everybody's going, yeah, it's the easiest path. You guys should easily be in the Final Four. He doesn't want his kids listening to that. That's the worst thing that could happen, right?
Oh, no question. I mean, think about it. On this show, Darren, what was it, a month ago? They'd come off of losing 4 in a row. We were looking at the end of their schedule, which seemed pretty difficult, and was like, gosh, can they even get to 500 in the SEC? And if they don't, they're probably in the tournament, but all of a sudden they're very much in the bubble conversation. They obviously got hot at the right time, finished strong, go win the SEC tournament. They're playing great basketball, but all of a sudden that team who everybody was counting out and these freshmen who've been lauded their whole lives and people say you can't do anything, now all of a sudden they're the favorites. How do they respond?
Let's find out a little bit more about that. Paul Biancardi, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN. He's on the line with us. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Darren. Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great.
Well, you tell us. You've got to put your coaching hat on. You know, now John Calipari's had to switch his whole storyline to this tournament because they went in, nobody talking about them. Everybody had them getting beat in the second round to Arizona. We know that matchup never even played out. Now everybody's looking at him like, if you don't get to the Final Four, you're a failure. So he's trying to switch the storyline. What's that like behind the scenes where he's trying to make sure his kids are focused down in Atlanta?
Well, I talked to Cal during the season when they were on their four-game losing streak, and Big Blue Nation thought the world was going to end. And John Calipari said, look, we just got to learn how to play with a little more fight on a consistent basis. We fight during the game. We fight on possessions, but we don't fight for 40 minutes. And once we learn how to fight and compete and defend for 40 minutes, he says, I think we can be really good. They went on that four-game losing streak. They only averaged 64 points a game. They didn't shoot it very well. Their last 10 games, okay, they're 9-1, 81 points per game, 49 from the floor, and 43 from three. They are playing on both ends of the floor at a high level, and it is falling just the way John Calipari wanted it to. Nobody talking about him going in, and, you know, he gets the upsets from the other teams to get his team's attention, that UMBC-Virginia game, obviously, and then the Buffalo win against Arizona. That did a lot of coaching for him, because what happens a lot of times is the big-name schools, the Dukes and the Virginias of the world, you know, they go through the gauntlet of the SEC or the ACC. Now your first game is a name that your kids know, but it's hard for them to really get up for because they've just went through Auburn, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Florida in the ACC. You know, Virginia beats Duke, Carolina, Syracuse. Now their kids see UMBC. And it's just a mindset that kids have sometimes. And so by the upsets happening, I think it really helped John Calipari coach this team.
Another thing, Paul, that stood out to me that I heard him talk about here recently is Coach Cal discussing noticing how you talked about that four-game losing streak, what he saw out of his team during that four-game losing streak where they were distraught. They were kids. You could tell that this really, really bothered them. And by the way, you know that's some of the battle, trying to figure out what you – not every kid has fight. Not every kid has that desire to win everything. And they – and, you know, will do whatever it takes to win. And I think he saw that fight in his team, and that probably gave him encouragement down the stretch. Like, hey, these kids want to win. That's a good thing. You can't coach that.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, kids say they want to be great. Kids say they want to be champions, and it takes a championship effort to be a champion. So, but there's not very many better than John Calipari in terms of maximizing the most of his team. I coached against him when I was an assistant coach at Boston College. His teams were good, okay, and we were really good, and they beat us twice. We played at the old Boston Garden on CBS. It was the game of the state of Massachusetts. He's an excellent X and O coach, but he doesn't get the credit for that because of the amount of talent that he puts on the floor. So where he gets a lot of credit, and deservedly so, is that he's a great motivator. He's an encourager. He has the ability to put people together that have different agendas, and we all know these kids are thinking – whether it's in the back of their mind or in the front of their mind about the NBA, he has a gift to bring the best together and make them play for one purpose, and that's what they're doing right now.
Paul Biancardi on the line with us, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN. The other SEC team left standing after the first two rounds was Texas A&M. And I don't know how many people had that. And Billy Kennedy has done a really good job. There was a lot of hype going into the season, Paul, but it didn't play out that way. And, you know, here they stand, and they've got a tall task tonight taking on Michigan. How do you see that game faring?
Well, guys, I sat right behind the Texas A&M bench when they not just beat North Carolina, they beat them down. I mean, that was impressive. And I was in Charlotte for all the games, so I saw UMBC beat Virginia. I saw Kansas State win two games. Texas A&M, to me, they were just so impressive in that North Carolina win. And it's the front court. Their front court, they're shooting 63% in the paint. That's only second to Duke. Tyler Davis and Robert Williams are averaging, you know, over 20 points a game combined in the paint. They're on the glass. They're blocking shots. They play man. They play zone. They're really impressive. Their guard play has been very consistent in terms of shooting and, you know, assist to turnovers. This team's scary to me. This team is scary good because they're seasoned. They have veterans. And you guys mentioned that they were up and down this year. They had suspensions. You know, they had some injuries. But now they're playing like that top five team that was ranked earlier in the year. And I was really impressed with them in Charlotte. And now they got a heck of a game coming up with Michigan, who is a tremendously gifted offensive team in terms of shooting the basketball. John Beilein, if anyone can dissect and cut up a defense, it's John Beilein. And Michigan has also played very good defense as of late. This one to me is a toss-up, but I don't know if Michigan can handle Texas A&M in the paint.
Yeah, you talked about their shooting, but, yeah, I wanted to ask you, does Billy Kennedy water those trees consistently? Because they seem like they grow from game to game. He's got some big boys. He makes it difficult. If you try to go in the paint, you're going to have to earn it.
No, he puts Robert Williams and Tyler Davis, see, he can shoot it outside the paint, and Robert Williams can keep you honest outside the paint. And when the shot's missed, I'm telling you, they're on the glass hard. And on the other end, you know, the not sexy defensive glass, nobody talks about the defensive glass. You shoot and miss against Texas A&M, they're cleaning that defensive glass up. You don't get second chance opportunities against Texas A&M. Their guards, you know, and DJ Ho can really stroke it. Starks, athletic, great game tonight. To me, it's a great game as well, as, and all the games are great. That one to me is a real even matchup. I'm going to be sitting close to see who wins that, and you know how that game plays out in terms of, you know, who can, you know, really put their will against the other team and their strategy.
Chatting with Paul Biancardi, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN. And Paul, if there's one bracket out there that has, I guess, sort of the blue bloods all the way through it, it's the Midwest region in Omaha with Kansas on one side, and then in the bottom half of the bracket, you've got Syracuse. Even though they're 11 seed, that's a blue blood program against Duke. What do you expect to see there, especially, I guess, the ACC matchup? Will Syracuse be able to bother Duke with that zone in the way they have everybody else in this tournament, considering Duke knows the zone and even plays it themselves some now these days?
Yes, well, Coach K got the zone from Jim Boeheim, so this is going to be an interesting matchup of schemes, but it's also very simple. Both teams will play a 2-3 zone, and the difference is, you know, Duke's guys are bigger, longer, more athletic, and that zone is a tougher zone to score against, the Duke zone, because they play it just like Syracuse. The two guys at the top have really good size, Grayson Allen, Trayvon Duval, 6'3 and 6'5, and then you got Marvin Bagley on one wing, and sometimes you have Gary Trent on the other, Wendell Carter at 6'9". They put in Delorier at 6'9". I think Duke's going to win this game because they're the better offensive team. And when it comes to scoring the basketball, Duke can, I think, effectively make shots against the zone. I think they do a good job of, what I like to say, dribble gap it. They take a hard dribble, they make two guys play you, and then they give it up to the next guy and do it again and keep that ball moving for open shots. Look for that. But also, they are going to attack the short corners, the high post, and I think they'll get more paint points than Syracuse. Very important thing to look at tonight. Watch each team to see who they put in the middle of that zone. Duke's going to put Gary Trent in there, Grayson Allen. You put guards, big guards or small forwards against the zone in the middle to score or be a playmaker. You don't want to put bigs, although Duke's bigs, Carter and Bagley, they can shoot it from that foul line, and they can put it on the deck and get to the basket. Better offense for Duke. I see them moving on.
Yeah, I thought that was where Michigan State made a mistake by not putting Miles Bridges there at any point against that zone. Paul, we talked about these last two games. You've brought up a common denominator in length with Texas A&M and then Duke against that Syracuse zone, who has plenty of length themselves. According to KenPom, five of the six tallest teams in the country moved on to the Sweet 16. So length seems to be a thing. No team has more length than Purdue, and I've been bullish on them all season long. But if Isaac Haas is not available or severely limited this weekend with the dislocated elbow, do they have any chance to get through that region and beat Villanova?
Well, I have to root for Purdue because I picked them in our ESPN expert picks. I picked them to win it all. I had them at the Battle for Atlantis down in the Bahamas, and they were up and down, but, boy, you could see the experience. You talked about the length across the board from, you know, 2, 3, 4 spot, and then obviously in the center spot with Haas and Harms. I still think they have a chance to get to the Final Four, and I'll tell you why. It's the three-point shot. They beat you at four positions with a three-point shooter. And if you stretch out against them, they're good enough. They're easily good enough to put it on the deck and get to the rim. So they have the offense, to me, not just in jump shooting, but they create some fouls. They're a very good two-point shooting team. They're experienced. Those guys are really experienced. We're talking about a handful of seniors that I think can get on a little bit of a two-game run right now. And, you know, Haas, is he going to play? I don't know. Obviously, he presented that inside-outside threat. But Purdue still survived without Haas by making the open shot. That's what they do best. If you give them uncontested shots or too many of them, you're going to lose.
Paul, I can't let you get away. I need to ask you to go into the recruiting crystal ball here. Romeo Langford, what's he going to do? Vanderbilt fans want to know.
Well, Vanderbilt fans want to know. I spoke to Romeo Langford and his father the other night. I do know that he's going to wait until the end of April. He has the McDonald's All-American game coming up. We also have the McDonald's scrimmage on TV on Tuesday at 3 o'clock, then the game on Wednesday, Jordan Brand Classic, and then the Nike Hoop Summit. And he told me the other night that he's thinking about waiting till those events are over till he makes a decision. So we all have to wait another 3 weeks. He's a man of very few words, and I couldn't even tell you which way he's leaning. But if my gut tells me it's between Indiana and Vanderbilt, but I have nothing to back that up. It's just my instincts on that one.
If he picks Vanderbilt with the class that Bryce Drew has already got committed, what is going to be the hype machine for Vandy going into next season, in your opinion?
Wow. It's going to be really high. And Bryce Drew, if he gets that commitment, will have to taper the expectations down. But that class will be talented. It will be skilled, be college-ready. Those four freshmen will start. Darius Garland, one of the best point guards in the country. He's right in the backyard there. You'll see him at the McDonald's game in the McDonald's scrimmage. Simi Shitu, a power forward who, you know, with an NBA body right now. So, and then there's a kid named Aaron Naismith. Get to know his name. He's 6'6", and he's one of the best shooters in the class.
Yep, he's a player.
He's in our ESPN Top 100. So if you add Romeo Langford to those four guys, you're looking at a Kentucky-type team.
Wow. Boy, it's a good problem to have as a coach, right? Tapering expectations because so many people are talking about you. I guess it's a good problem to have, but, I mean, you know, you're going to have to taper no matter what. Even if they don't land him, it's still going to be a really, really good team, as we know. Paul, really enjoyed the visit. Thanks for the for talking a little hoops with us. Let's do it again soon.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Paul Biancardi, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN, and he just gave us bad news. We're going to have to wait till at least the end of April. This story is going to continue until at least the end of April.
It is, but they have put in a ton of work. Roger Powell, the assistant, has got a great relationship with that family. I know Bryce Drew has been up there a bunch. They've been in on him early. They've been in on him often. And they also have good deals with Darius Garland and his relationship with him as well. I know Darius Garland is serving as a recruiter in this situation too. So it's an opportunity to take what is already a very good class and make it a truly elite class at the top. And I'm glad he brought up Naismith too, because he is a big time shooter that I think is getting overlooked because of the other guys and just how highly rated they are. But I think he can be a piece that right away at the college level can give you immediate points on the perimeter.
20 years in this town, I never thought I would hear the words that class will be compared to Kentucky's class when it comes to basketball. And that's what he said if they land Romeo. Wow. For Vanderbilt. Man, oh, man. That tells you the job Bryce Drew and his staff are doing. And, man, if they can get this final piece, it is going to be possibly a really special season next year. We'll come back. Speaking of that, we'll head over to West End. We'll talk to their football coach. Derek Mason will join us next on 102.5 The Game. Don't forget the Honky Tonk Hat Trick, brought to you by Bud Light, is back tonight. Join Nick Gale from 5 until 6:30 at Rippey's, prior to the Predators showdown with Toronto. The Leafs are in the house tonight. While you're there, register for a pair of tickets to the game and passes to the Bud Light Zone. You may win a VIP hockey experience. Be sure to stop by Tootsie's, Rippey's, and Honky Tonk Central before Predators weekday home games for specials on Bud Light. You're probably wondering, okay, what's the VIP hockey experience? Well, here's what it is. A pair of tickets to an upcoming Predators game, dinner for two before the game, and a ride on the Zamboni during intermission. Stop by Rippey's after every Predators home game for two-for-one drinks until they close. Sounds like fun to me. It's going to be fun in here. I don't know if you've seen, but I feel like half of Canada is downstairs in the building. Now, this is how they travel, Steve, but I think there's also a little bit of they mark this trip like, you know, they kind of push their bosses. We think we really need to be a part of this trip. We need to make sure we cover this Predators game very closely.
And do you think that is because the Predators are great, or do you think that's because this area outside the arena here is really great?
For the purposes of not getting them in trouble, see all the above.
Okay. All right. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Every time there's a Canadian team around, there's just more people in the room. That's just the bottom line. That's the coverage they get. The Maple Leafs are one of those preeminent teams in Canada with long story, tradition, original six franchise. The thing is, I think we're going to see a lot more of this because the Preds – in past years when they've gotten into the playoffs and they've been kind of that middle-tier team or whatever, not a lot of people were in their room at the start of the playoffs, Darren. I expect that to be different this year. I'm glad they renovated that dressing room because it's bigger, because we need it. Because last year in the Stanley Cup final, it was impossible. And this year, I don't think the crowds are going to be any less, and I think they're going to start coming earlier because of how good this team has been.
No doubt about that. I think you are exactly right. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night. Are we going to see totally different opponents? Well, we know the first-round matchup will not be the same because Chicago's out. They're eliminated.
That's true.
First time they haven't been in the playoffs in over a decade. And I started to think the same thing as I was watching the Blues and the Bruins last night. But the Blues came back and won. Mm-hmm. They were down 1-0 late. Schwartz gets a late third-period goal, or at least a little bit past the halfway point, ties it up at one, and then Schwartz wins it again in overtime. So the Blues get a much-needed 2 points.
Because that's three in a row.
I thought, if they lose, I was like, man, every loss, that hill gets so much steeper for St. Louis. I was like, I think we're getting dangerously close to the first two opponents that the Predators faced last year in the playoffs. They won't even be in the playoffs, but St. Louis won, and they are right there. They're the first team on the outside looking in.
Yeah, they are.
Dallas has moved below them now.
And have lost six in a row. I feel like Dallas is heading out of the conversation here. I feel like Colorado, the way it's playing, and Nathan MacKinnon just keeps scoring every time he steps on the ice, I think Colorado's moving itself into a pretty safe position to probably get the first wild card.
Or depending on what the Predators do with Minnesota,
yeah,
because they have them twice here.
Potentially even catch up with Minnesota. But I feel like Colorado's safe. I feel like even if Minnesota gets caught by Colorado, I feel like they're safe to be in the playoffs. So what it comes down to me now is looking at that second wild card, is it can the Blues continue this run and get back in there? And then who of those Pacific Division teams? They're all bunched fairly tightly together. I think right now I have the most faith in the Sharks to be there, but between the Ducks and the Kings are slightly in front, but they've played an extra game. Ducks, I think, are a point back with the game in hand. which one of those teams gets into the third slot in the Pacific, and then between that team that doesn't get in and the Blues, who is able to play the best down the stretch and secure the eighth seed. It's going to be fascinating to watch here.
By the way, I felt like another team in the Western Conference was eliminated last night. The Flames are done. They lost at home. They got shut out at home by the Ducks, 4-0. So I think the Flames, they're no longer lit. They're done.
They've been extinguished.
Yes. Good. Well done. Yeah. I think Calgary is out now. So that leaves St. Louis and Dallas, really. That's it. Trying to jostle their way into those final two wild card spots. As you mentioned, Colorado with 88 points, Minnesota with 90.
Yeah.
And the Predators have Minnesota
twice
on Saturday. And then they're back here hosting Minnesota next week.
And fortunately for Colorado, the Preds are done with them because they're the only team that can win in Colorado, period.
Right.
And they've done it twice in the last couple of weeks. So fortunately for the Avs, they don't have to face the gold anymore.
Colorado has won 25 games at home this year.
Yeah. Well, what are they just overall? They're like 13 of the last 15 or 14 of 16, and those two losses are to the Preds in Colorado.
I was looking at the – let's see, Boston has – so Boston and Toronto both have 25 wins at home, just to put this in perspective. And Boston and Toronto are – well, Boston's not – they still could win the Atlantic. I don't think they're going to. I think it's going to be Boston 2, Toronto 3.
Yep.
In the Atlantic, but they both have 25 wins at home. Tampa has 27. Pittsburgh has 27. Washington has 26. Those are all teams that have the same or more home wins than Colorado, just to put it in perspective, and all those teams are higher than Colorado in the standings over in the Eastern Conference.
Makes a lot of
sense.
That's
just to kind of put it in perspective of what the Pepsi Center has been like for the Avs this year.
Oh, no question about it. It's also interesting, I was looking at the numbers. There's some really good teams at the top of the Eastern Conference, obviously. You named a bunch of them right there. But when you get back down towards 7 or 8 in the overall standings there, and then the teams that are just on the outside looking in, and then you compare them to the teams on the cut line in the Western Conference, the depth of the Western Conference in terms of points is still greater. You know, I felt for a long time like the Western Conference was just the better conference when you started to get into the playoffs. And obviously the Penguins have changed that a little bit over the last couple of years. I think the Eastern Conference has gotten better. I wondered this year if it had almost switched, that if the Eastern Conference had become the dominant conference, then outside of the Predators, how much power really is there in the Western Conference? But when you just look at it based off of points, Darren, there's a lot of depth in the Western Conference of good teams. Maybe not great teams. I still think, as we talked about, I think you gave the odds last week, that what was it, of the top 10 teams according to Vegas, like 7 of them were from the Eastern Conference or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think that's pretty accurate. But when you start talking about a first-round opponent, I think whoever the number one overall seed in the East is going to have a much easier first round than – probably the Predators is the number one overall seed in the West, just because the depth at that part of the conference is just better.
I think the Eastern Conference is going to be fascinating watch in the playoffs, because I think they are going to hopefully just beat each other up.
Yeah.
It is good. I mean, really, when you look at the teams that are in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, outside of really right now, Philadelphia and New Jersey would be the two in. Those would be the two wildcard teams. So, but Florida's still right there. They could get in. Outside of that, those top six, Washington, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Tampa, Boston, Toronto, would you be surprised if any of them came out of the Eastern Conference? I mean, obviously there's a little bit different layers. Like your Pittsburgh surprise is going to be hardly no surprise. And Columbus will obviously have some surprise to it. Would you be surprised if – I mean, look at the way Columbus is playing right now. Washington, yeah, they haven't been able to do it, but would you be surprised if they did it this year?
No. I wouldn't be surprised about anything that happens in the Eastern Conference. You talk about that first-round series. Boston-Toronto, it's going to be a fascinating first-round series. Somebody's going to be out after round one. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. We're going to take a break. I guess Derek Mason has called in. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll head over to West End. We'll talk to their football coach. Next on 102.5 The Game. If you're looking for something to do on Saturday, I think we've got a good idea for you. Back here on 102.5 The Game, Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. Willie Donick will join us a little bit later in the program. Predators are out on the ice right now. They are playing the Maple Leafs this evening at Bridgestone Arena. 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6. Let's head over to West End. Let's bring in Vanderbilt's football coach, Derek Mason. He's on the line with us. Coach, how you doing? Good morning.
Doing well. Just got out of a little to-do with some recruits. I mean, who showed up on campus. So, you know what? When recruits come calling, man, you got to make sure that you pay attention.
That end of it is Walmart, right? That's open 24/7, right?
24/7, absolutely.
I want you to sell to the listeners right now, just like you sell to recruits, why they need to be over at your place on Saturday afternoon.
Opportunity, man, to see this 2018 football team, man, is unbelievable. You get a chance to see a quarterback, man, who will probably have an opportunity post his college career, man, to play in the NFL, and Kyle Shurmur. And you get a chance to get a first take, a first look, okay, at this revamped offensive line. Everybody's coming back defensively. Under Jason Tarver, man, this group is fierce. They're fast, extremely athletic. It just gives our fan base and anybody who loves college football, SEC football, an opportunity to come out on a gorgeous day and watch what we do here in the South, which is play football on this campus at Vanderbilt University. If you miss it, you'll regret it.
3 until 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon over at Vanderbilt Stadium. It'll be aired on SEC Network. Of course, you'll do all the usual stuff, the inter-squad scrimmage and the 7-on-7 passing and individual drills and all that good stuff. It's free to the public. You're going to have live music, food trucks that'll be there early, inflatables for the kids. It'll be a lot of fun, a photo booth, carnival games. If you're looking for something to do and the price is right, which is free, you should go over to Vanderbilt and be a part of their spring game. Obviously, we've talked to you, Derek, about this team, and I can still tell it in your voice as we sit here in late March. You're pretty pumped about what you think's on the horizon for this team, right? I feel like you are the early returns is you like what you see out on the field. Is that fair to say?
I do. You know what? I think every coach is, you know, cautiously optimistic. We haven't played any games. We haven't done anything. I thought we finished the season the right way. But it's where you are now. I've asked this team to really be where its feet are in terms of practice every day. We're not conceding reps. We're making sure that we really task one another. We go at one another. And that's the way practices have looked. We've been outside in the elements. It's been warm. It's been cold. It's been everything in between. And this group has come to work every day. So anytime you have a veteran quarterback, what you're looking to do is put it on his back. Kyle Shurmur's going to be a senior. He's flanked with a solid offensive line that's getting better every practice, a really good running game, and I think a defense that's going to show up in 2018. So with that being said, come on out. I'm excited about this team, and it's time for us to showcase exactly who we are and what we can do.
You talked about Kyle Shurmur. We've certainly watched him over the years, and, man, it's pretty cool to see what he's turned into, and obviously the expectations around the league, not just for you, but around the league, he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks that everybody is going to talk about in the league. But you as the coach, you have to always be forward-thinking, whether it's recruiting, your roster, who's next. And, yeah, you may take it week by week during the season, but you know, coach, you're always having to think down the road. So Kyle Shurmur, you're hoping the best for him this year, but there has to be the next guy after him. Do you think you have – the next guy after him down the road for 2019?
I sure do. As I take a look at it, we had a great recruiting class this last year, headlined by a quarterback by the name of Alan Walters, and I think Alan will be a good young quarterback, but Alan will learn under Deuce Wallace. Deuce Wallace is somewhat of a unicorn nowadays in college football because nobody wants to stay around long enough in a program to try to figure out how to be better. Okay, he's learned under Kyle. He's seen Kyle play great. He's seen Kyle make mistakes. But really, he's grown into his own. And if you've had a chance or watched us a year ago, when Deuce stepped in, Deuce was outstanding. His arm talent is tremendous. His movement in the pocket, You know, I mean, lends itself to us being able to be a different ball club, and maybe when Kyle gets out of here. But what I'll say about Deuce is that Deuce will be the next Commodore quarterback to have a chance or an opportunity to be big on a big stage.
Good deal. Okay, I've got the pen in my hand, and I've got a piece of paper right here because you're the expert on this question. Young guys, you had a nice recruiting class. Young guys, some guys maybe we have never seen yet, but you have. You and your staff, you're fully aware of what you have on this roster. Give me a name or two that we need to pay close attention to in 2018 that I'm going to write it down right now. I'm going to see if it plays out this regular season.
Cam Johnson.
Cam Johnson, okay. Why?
Dynamic receiver. He has inside, outside skill set. Extremely explosive, really good with the ball in his hands from Brentwood Academy. C.J. Bowler, who's already here on campus. You know, C.J.'s out of Mississippi, extremely talented, has already shown up, okay, in scrimmages, and I believe he's going to have a chance to impact this squad. Javon Rice, who's already on campus. You know, he's a field goal kicker who I think is going to, you know, step in and, you know, step out in 2018. Austin Orji. Inside linebacker, who I think is going to be impactful, you know, out of Texas. Those are four names. I'm going to stop right there because I can go through the roster. But I truly believe that, you know, I mean, those four guys, two of them here, two of them that are away, guys on different sides of the ball that are going to have a chance to impact us in 2018.
I opened up that door, didn't I? And you ran right through it. I like it.
I did. Absolutely.
You know what that means? You guys are recruiting well if you got guys who can step up like that right away. One thing I've noticed, Coach, is when your defense has been humming and has been at its best and one of the best defenses in the SEC, it starts up front, I know, but your secondary has been elite and has been ball hawks and have helped you create turnovers. I know it's early in spring ball, but how does this safety or how does this secondary led by safety Ladarius Wiley and some of the other guys you have back there stack up compared to some of those great ones you've had in the past?
This is the best secondary I've had since I've been here. I know, you know, I mean, that may sound, you know, far reaching, but, you know, Juwan Williams is a lockdown corner. Okay. At, you know, 6'3", you know, 208 pounds. My man can play. He's just a lockdown corner. And if you go back and watch the tape, that's exactly what the tape shows. But Darius Wiley may be the most, you know, or really when you go back and look at the statistics, he may be the most productive safety, okay, in the SEC. So, I mean, I'm excited to have him. And then we've got young guys. We've got Elijah Hamilton. We've got Donovan Sheffield, man, who's out on the corner. And you got Zaire Jones. You got Tay Daly. I mean, this group is athletic. They can run. They're fast. They're physical. Coach Tarver is excited about what these guys can do. And right now, as it looks, you know, 10 practices in, these guys are getting after it. They're doing things that we haven't done here in terms of attacking the football. And that's collectively. But to your point, the game really starts up front. We have more D-line depth than we've ever had. We're going to be able to probably rotate and go at least three deep. Okay, man, for the first time in my tenure, but this is Jason Tarver's defense. And for me, man, I'm just sitting back and having a good time, you know, watching every facet of my football team grow.
You set him up. You got him all these recruits. Then you turned over the defense to him. He's set up for success.
Well, that's the way you're supposed to do it. You're not supposed to, you know, like leave somebody, you know, empty-handed. I mean, I wanted to make sure, man, that he would have a chance for success. And what he's brought to the table in terms of energy, schematic genius, and really just, you know, man, an overall a great teaching concept for these guys. These guys are eating it up. They love that he's an NFL guy bringing an NFL mentality and an NFL mantra to college football. So we just got to continue to ride.
You bring in Jason Tarver from the NFL to lead your defense. Another guy you hired this offseason that really – piqued my interest is former Super Bowl champion wide receiver Aaron Moorhead to be your receivers coach. He's an interesting story, Coach, because he went from a walk-on in college to a Super Bowl champion. Now he's bounced around as an assistant coach, learning under some really good coaches. What can he bring to that wide receiver room and to your team as a whole?
He's touching it now. I mean, everything that he talks about is winning and how to be a champion. And we had time spent together at Stanford where, you know, he helped develop Doug Baldwin, Ty Montgomery, you know, Kevin Kajust. I mean, we had players. And you know, for him to go to Virginia Tech and then to Texas A&M and have a chance to develop guys like Christian Kirk, it has really piqued the interest of the guys in the room. They're working extremely hard to try to give, you know, Coach Moorhead exactly what he wants. And believe me, I mean, it's for him, he's got believability. He's played it. He's done it. He's won Super Bowls. He's been in big games. He's coached in big games. And so he's trying to get those guys to be big game hunters. So right now, we just got to stay in the mode, stay focused, and continue to grind.
With Vanderbilt coach Derek Mason, you guys have gone through 10 practices, and you said things have been very positive so far in spring ball. As you get set for the spring scrimmage and fans start to fill into the stadium on Saturday, it's not a true game like you're going to get on September 2nd or whatever next fall, but it does raise the intensity a little bit when the lights come on, so to speak. What do you hope to learn about your team under that setting on Saturday?
Well, I mean, for a great number of these guys, you know, it really is their first opportunity even to be big on a big stage, in front of a live crowd. Obviously, you know, when you're in practice, you know, practice is practice, but these guys are taking practice the right way. So I truly believe that they're going to, you know, I mean, take it from a practice setting to, you know, in a game setting. But I just want to see these guys perform under pressure. I don't want to see these guys, you know, worry about, you know, who's in the stands and what people are doing around football. They got to play the game. Game gets played between the white lines. They got to show up, show out. Let's have some fun. Let's make it a great Saturday.
What do you do after Saturday when there's a break in the action? Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to do a trip with the family? What's Derek Mason going to do in the off time?
You know what? I'm still building this team out. I mean, there are no days off. Every day for me is like fourth and goal. So I've just got to make sure that I stay focused. I like the energy of this team, but, you know, I mean, I can't afford to let the energy die. When summer comes, I'll take time off. We got to get back to the recruiting. We got to make sure, okay, man, that we turn our you know, sights towards that 19 class and just keep going because that's what's needed.
All right, I wanted you to unplug for just a minute. You didn't unplug. You're in football mode. I get it. I know. I got it. I've talked to you long enough. I get it. Hey, have fun on Saturday. Hope you get a good crowd, and we'll do it again real soon.
All right, take care. Anchor down.
Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach, 3 until 5 o'clock. Their spring game, their spring showcase over Vanderbilt Stadium. It'll be aired on SEC Network. Free admission, live music. They'll have food trucks out there, inflatables for the kids, balloon artists, face painters, carnival games. Be a lot of fun. Look, and the price is right.
Oh,
right?
For
and,
sure.
And hopefully the weather's going to cooperate. I know it's hard to think that these days, but hopefully I haven't even looked at Saturday. I don't even know.
Take a break from the basketball.
Do you think
get out there, watch a little
bit. You think
football.
It's going to be – have you looked at the forecast?
It's supposed to be warmer, chance of rain, however.
Okay. Well, it seems like that's every day.
It might actually feel like spring if it's warmer and it's raining.
Yeah, can we just
right
at
now
this
we
point,
have this sunny weather, which is weird this time of year, but then it's 45 degrees outside.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Trying to practice baseball with 5 and 6 year olds,
although
in the 40s is not cool for spring.
No, that is not good. Although I have family on the East Coast, and I've gotten some pictures from them in the last couple days.
It's worse.
I'll take whatever we have right now.
Right, but we know that. We know about the North and the Northeast, but that's why we're here.
There's a reason we live
here.
Yeah,
there's a reason we're here. I get it. I know. I've experienced it. You've experienced it. We know what winters and how long it can go on, but we're in the South now, and we expect it to be warm at this point. Hopefully warmer temperatures are just around the corner. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk to Mike Rupp, NHL Network. We'll talk about the Predators and Maple Leafs matchup tonight, and a lot more are going on around the league. We will do that to kick off the second hour. That's next on 102.5 The Game.